This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Theatre, film, TV, and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Good afternoon, Susie Rong.
Hello, Warren. I've been cheating on you.
I know. You have been too. Let's have a conversation about this.
I've gone to interview four other people. So I speak to other people, not just you.
Oh, that's actually really exciting, Susie. What I want to know is how do we go and hear you? Where do we hear you?
Well, I've launched a new podcast. It came out late last week. Mm-hmm. And you can find it, you know, where you find a podcast. Most people use Spotify or Apple Music. Mm-hmm. It's going to come out on YouTube a little bit later so that you can see my actual face.
Oh. What sort of things do you talk about, Susie?
It's basically I speak with my theatre friends, people who work in theatre, but I'm not talking only about theatre. You know the way I like to kind of talk around and kind of meander and just talk about everything, talk about life in general. So each episode could be around 45 minutes, could be over an hour. So it's a much more in-depth discussion about art, about life.
Oh, I love it, Susie. We'll be listening to
you. So you can go looking on Spotify, Apple Music, etc., whichever you like to use, and search Here We Are, with no spaces in between. Here We Are, and you'll be able to find the first episode. We've recorded four episodes and hopefully more to come.
Oh, Susie, I love it. And hopefully, you know, Joy Drive has played a role in you doing that podcast as well.
Of course, I've learned all my interview skills from you, like seriously. I'm always listening to you talking to people and I'm like, how does he sound so interested when they're talking about really random things? Like your range is so huge, because a lot of the stuff that you interview, I'm like, I know nothing about, so I wouldn't be able to get into a conversation with those people. But because I'm talking with theatre people, we talk about art, and that's the area that I'm familiar with.
Fantastic, Susie. But you're still staying here on Joy Drive, aren't you, of course?
Oh, you can't get me. You can't remove me.
And we're going to listen to you
in two places. It's the best thing on a Tuesday.
So before you go, what do we search for when we want to listen to you? I want to know, because I'm going to be listening to every single one. And then I'm going to get you on Drive and say, Susie, you said.
Well, search Here We Are, HEREWEARE, with no spaces in between, and you'll be able to find it and have a listen over the next 4 weeks, and let me know what you think.
Fantastic, Susie. Congratulations. I love it. It's very, very exciting. Susie, I just want to say before we talk about the program that we're going to talk about today, which is I'm Your Venus, if any of the conversation raises any issues for you, if you head to joy.org.au/support, you'll find a list of support services available. Susie, let's talk about it. We're talking about I'm Your Venus. It's streaming on Netflix. What did you think of it?
It's more than 30 years since the seminal documentary Paris is Burning was released. Still, the most chilling part of that film was when it revealed that one of its characters, the beautiful young trans woman Venus Extravaganza, was murdered before filming had completed. Now, decades later, in the new Netflix documentary I'm Your Venus, we revisit that horrific case, which remains unsolved all these years. We follow both Venus's families, her biological one and her queer chosen one, as they explore ways to get the legal system in New York to find out more of what happened in 1988, the night Venus was brutally taken away. Most of I'm Your Venus focuses on the three Pellegatti brothers, Venus's Italian and Puerto Rican birth family, who share memories of their late sister, most of which are loving but sometimes also regretful, as they talk about an earlier time when trans people had virtually nowhere safe to go. The Pellegatti brothers today are sincere, warm, and generous men, but we also see how little they understand about the difficulties that Venus had experienced in the 80s, whether at home or out in the wild of New York City. I'm Your Venus takes us on a new investigation into a murder which was ignored for so long, allowing us to learn new facts and to observe how attitudes about trans people have changed in some ways, but also how they have not changed in other ways. I remember Venus very well from the Paris is Burning movie, which I revisit every few years. That documentary was important to me as a teenager, and as I grow older, it becomes even more valuable as I become more thoughtful about our histories as queer people. The Pelagatis were nowhere to be seen in Paris is Burning, but they are now front and center in I'm Your Venus. We can only interpret that as an improvement in how queer people are regarded, or maybe just that people take time to come to their senses. We don't know for sure if the Pelagatis had attempted to find justice previous to this new movie, but it appears they are finally doing the right thing for their sister. It may look like they're searching for the murderer, but it also feels like atonement, as though they go through the labor and the heartache of looking back at how poorly Venus had been treated. For me, I'm Your Venus is deeply sad. My head was literally in pain from witnessing the suffering of my trans tribe, and also from the sorrow that the Pelagatti brothers wrestle with in trying to come to terms with the loss of their younger sibling who deserved much better protection. Warren, do you remember the old movie Paris is Burning?
I do remember the old movie Paris is Burning, but Susie, this there's something about this movie, I'm Your Venus, on Netflix, and it's the family, watching the family and the uncomfortable truth that they claim they loved their sister, and I don't doubt that they didn't love their sister, but the uncomfortable truth that they said things, they did things while she was alive that they now regret that she's gone. And I don't know, it just struck me that once someone's gone, it's kind of too late. And you can see the struggle in trying to come to terms with their discomfort about what was said, as well as the reconciling that with this love that they have for her, trying to get this closure when she's gone. I found that so sad and so uncomfortable to watch, and I felt sorry for them because they've lost their sister, but I wanted to scream out and say, why didn't you give her, show her the love when she needed it? It's, do you know what I mean? It's too late now.
Yeah, they are showing in this documentary sort of a lot of love, but mostly regret, I think. I feel like so much of it was them trying to make up for what I think they believe to have had to have gone wrong and that they were partly responsible for. But they never come out and say that they didn't make life easy for Venus. You know, they kind of said that we always did love her, and maybe they were implying that she wanted a different life away from them. But I feel like I'm imagining when these men were in their 20s, they must have been hell to deal with in the 80s. And she was a skinny little thing and, you know, obviously the youngest of them. And I'm sure she felt rejected, even though they never say in the documentary that that's how they felt about her. And, you know, it made her go and live a really difficult, rough life. And, you know, and there's no debating that, because she was murdered and most likely from doing sex work on the streets of New York. So there's no way that the family can say that they loved and protected her, because the facts point to something otherwise, you know. And to see them trying to make up for it, you know, it is very heartwarming, but I was saying earlier, my head hurt, like literally hurt. That's this, and you were talking about the discomfort. There's this kind of stress for there me is. Watching this thing. Yeah, isn't it?
There is, and probably more so for you, Susie, but just watching it and just thinking, oh, can families really redeem themselves after someone's gone? I mean, it's great what they're doing, and they're leading the way in getting her tombstone changed, or plaque, or whatever it is, you know, changed to reflect her name, Venus Extravaganza, that she wanted. But what does that, that's great, and I love the fact that they're doing that, and I can't speak for trans people, but I just can't help but think, wouldn't it have been nicer had they loved her and supported her while she was alive, rather than trying to get comfort now by doing things now that she's gone? I guess what I'm trying to say are there efforts about trying to find who killed her, or are there efforts about trying to make themselves feel better for what they perhaps didn't do? I couldn't get the answer to that by watching the documentary. At the end of the documentary, I still felt quite uncomfortable thinking, what is this about? Is this about Venus, or is this about the family?
Yeah, it's about... I feel like so much of it is about these three men who are growing old and having a different perspective of life, you know, and they're finally kind of really coming to terms and coming, understanding the gravity of their actions as young men. In my opinion, not enough, because there's very little of owning up to their shortcomings when it mattered, you know, when she was defenseless and a young person in New York City. But I don't doubt their sincerity now, and I don't think it's right to say that it's better late than never, because it is too late. But I guess in some ways, I see that, you know, the tide has changed so much that, you know, at least, and now they have a language to talk about it. You know, they're able to express themselves a little bit. And some of their reflections of the past kind of show that there is no way to understand. And I guess by implication, not a real way to understand. You know, if you can't talk about it, you can't really understand what was happening to a sister of theirs, and which resulted in her having a really difficult life.
And the other thing is, Susie, that we can take from this as well is, you know, we've got our families, and some people have more strained relationships than others. Some people have really good families with lots of love and support. And I certainly don't have, can't understand what it would be like, for someone like Venus growing up, or someone like yourself growing up. But I have my own experience, and I look at it now, and the slightest things that go on, the slightest disapproval from your family, the slightest criticism from your family that you're not good enough or you're weird or something's wrong with you, impacts us later on in life. You know, I think, you know, I come from that I suppose that British background where affection is not shown. You know, affection, I mean, my mother, may she rest in peace, having passed away only a month or so ago, I can't remember her hugging me or ever saying I love you, Warren. And that for me has come through in my ability to love people and to hug people. I've struggled hugging. It was like this strange sensation. How do we do it? I don't know. I feel uncomfortable. That's a mild example of my, I suppose, what's gone in my family. Imagine being someone like Venus and being told, don't go out wearing boys' clothes when you walk the baby. Whatever went on in that, imagine the impact that would have on their life. If I'm talking about just not being hugged and my struggles in terms of showing affection and hugging people, and we're talking about people who are rejected and all sorts of things go on.
Yeah. That makes me think about my father, and, you know, I think sometimes it's easy for me to kind of put a lot of blame on my father and a lot of his, he had, I guess, it's so hard to put into words, but I guess in some ways he had rejected me, but not as a child. Like I was well into my 20s. He had rejected me, and then I went through, you know, a decade or two of a lot of difficulty trying to come to terms with it. And now that I am older, I think a lot about how he had grown up and how he was, from what I gather, because he's not able ever to articulate what his childhood was like. I literally asked him, you know, because now, like, you know, I'm older and he's older, and we're trying to have more open discussions. And I said, would you be able to write a little a bit of our family history, you know, for my benefit and for your grandchildren's benefit. So we know our sort of legacy, our history, and why we are who we are. And he pretty much says that it's too hard, it's too painful. And he's a man in his 70s, and he's still unable to come to terms with those things.
So this is from his, when he grew up.
Yeah, yeah. And just how, I guess, there was a, it feels like it was a lack of love and affection in his family. And I understand it now as a grown-up about how it makes it easy for him to be cruel to his children.
Mm.
Does that make sense? I'm trying to make it, like, you know, quite succinct.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I feel like, Susie, if I interpret it right, you're saying, you know, it's almost like we learn the behavior, don't we, from our parents? Like, they show us, they... For example, in my case, I wasn't taught how to love. It doesn't mean they didn't love me, but I wasn't taught. I didn't know how to do it. Is that what you're saying, Susie? It's almost like your father wasn't taught.
Well, I think it's more like he learned what means love to him, I think, feels a lot like pain, feels a lot like suffering, feels a lot like rejection. And it's difficult to get my head around it, but I think there's something in his rejection of me and my brother. There's a parallel with that, between that and his feeling of rejection from his parents. And then sometimes I look at how, he makes his marriage, both his marriages with my mother and his current wife, very tumultuous and very difficult. And I feel like, oh, is that love to you? Do you feel love from when people are angry with you or something? So I've been thinking about that, you know, like that someone, I read someone write these words about love is about finding, like a familiarity. So, and this familiarity can be very different for all kinds of people. And
so true.
And I kind of come to this conclusion that maybe it's this discord that my father needs, you know, this kind of discord and this upheaval, the feeling that someone is angry with you, upset with you, frustrated with you, that makes you feel somehow loved and wanted. And then subconsciously he's enacting all these things that get people around him angry with him all the time. And then obviously then the lesson for us on the sidelines is not to get involved, you know, if it's something that he's actively trying to do.
Susie, I wonder how much of it also is how much we observe the relationships of our parents, and maybe in your case, your father's parents. We observe and we model those relationships, because that's what we know, that's what we watch. I wonder how much
of that goes on as well. Yeah, because the love, the word love seems like such a standard word, and we all assume that we know what it means. But I have a feeling that everyone's relationship to that very concept is wildly different. And that's based so much on your experience of what love feels like, looks like from when you were much younger. I don't know if it's something that you can grow out of.
Did your father ever tell you that he loved you?
Oh, yeah. He made it a big point to tell me he loved me when I was young. And I think when you're a young parent, you do a lot of that thing where you're doing the antithesis, the anti of what your parents did. Mm. You feel like you're young, you know the errors that they had committed, and you're committed to not do the same. So you would go the complete other way. And he verbalized that to me when I was a child. He said, oh, my parents never showed me love. My parents would never hug me, would never say love to me. And I'll make it a point to not do that to you. But he eventually did do that to me when I grew up. It's weird.
Was it after you transitioned that
No. It has nothing to do with my queerness, because he's done the same to my brother, who is a straight married man. So the evidence points to not about that, but about himself.
Do you know, bringing it back, I suppose, to I'm Your Venus, which is on Netflix now. If you look at how Venus was, the caveat I will say is we fill in a lot of the dots, don't we, in terms of how Venus was treated. And one thing where it, I suppose that clash, that discomfort came out for me, Susie, and I'd be interested in what you thought, is when the family talked to one of the friends, that guy, and you can see that he's quite upset, and he says, you know, if I wasn't, I'm paraphrasing, but if I wasn't, you know, as mature as I am now, if I hadn't learned my lessons, this would be a lot more uncomfortable when they meet. There's that scene. And I'm wondering what it would be like, you, for example, or me, talking to friends who observed us and our relationships with our parents as well, and see if we get the same sort of observation as what we feel our relationship was like. Like, what would your brother say?
I don't
say?
Think it'll be the same.
No.
Oh, my brother? Well, friends and family is different, right? I think my brother and I have bonded over the last maybe 10 years because he had a baby about 10 years ago, and that allowed us to be closer, and that allowed us to open up discussions about our feelings about this sort of rejection from our father. And we've shared notes, and 10 years is a lot of, you know, kind of informal therapy.
Does he feel the same?
He feels the same. I think we have very different interpretations about why my father does the things that he does. So I think our interpretation of our understanding of the whys are a little bit different, but it has been good to see that we feel the same. The consequence is similar, even though we understand the situation differently, like how we feel and how we respond to my father's actions are very similar. And through that, we have been able to cultivate ways to deal with it in healthier ways.
Susie, we're talking about I'm Your Venus, which you can stream on Netflix at the moment. Look, Susie, to be honest, I found it uncomfortable to watch. I found it, I felt for Venus. I thought the family, you know, just, you know, even if Venus's killer is ever found, can justice ever be served in other ways through this honouring her legacy, creating art, you know, changing systems? The fact is she was murdered and she lost her life. And I just think, if you think of all the people throughout history, all the queer people that have gone through a similar experience or, you know, taken their own life, it's just, it's not fair. It has to stop. And I don't know, Venus is just, it's another one of these sad stories. It's one of the stories that we're hearing about, but there's so many more out there.
Well, next week's story is about survivors, so that's going to be better.
Oh, good. Susie Rong, what are we watching next week?
Another new documentary about trans trailblazers has just dropped. This one is called Enigma, and you can find it on Max. It tells the story of two trans women who were born in the 1930s. So that's a lot more queer history to think about for when I see you next Tuesday.
Susie, bye-bye. And before you go, this has come in saying extraordinary insights this evening. Susie and Warren, thank you, as always. There you go.
Thank you. Nice to be appreciated. Susie, are we going out with Bananarama?
Yes, we're going out with Bananarama. Venus, Susie, before we go, where do we get your podcast?
Get on to your favorite podcasting platform and search Here We Are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.